A lot of people are saying this in the business: the superstar of radio is rapidly dying away. One of the things that appears to be hastening that demise is the Much More Music radio station. In Detroit, two superstars still live and are very popular, according to Robin Seymour.
What can I say about Dick Purton that hasn't been said already? I think he's a bright, bright man and truly a fabulous genius. And all I can say about Dick is that it's lucky he's had Robin Seymour in Detroit, because then what would he have had to talk about? You know, he wouldn't have the Robin Seymour freeway. And he wouldn't have the old rock and roll. But seriously about Dick, I think he's a tremendous fella. And as long as he wears white socks, he'll be a big success in this town.
Let's live it up with Dick Purton.
On WKNR, Keener
13. The Dick Purton Show from WKNR, Keener 13, and all that blah, blah, blah. 10:08 WKNR time. More music more often and all that stuff. Let's see, we have a new forecast in. Detroit area weather forecast, it says. Temperature is 67. Oh, wait a minute. How could it be? How could this be new if the thing up on the wall says 60? Well, once again, I see that the news department has completely followed up. And although Jim Martin claimed this is a new forecast, this probably cleared the wire at 7:45. As a matter of fact, 7 p.m. temperature he just brought in. Oh, excuse me. I'm reading the wrong one. I'm so sorry. This one says 10 p.m. Jim, my humble apologies to you, sir. Temperature is indeed 60. Wind east-northeast at 6. Let's see. The weather eye, well, I can't read it. What a moment.
Many radio listeners in the Detroit area believe Dick Purton is among the funniest and most innovative personalities ever to speak a word into a microphone in the Motoropolis.
It was the first night show I'd ever done in my life. I had never, when I was starting out in Syracuse as the Buckaroo Sandman, playing country and western music by request from 8:30 to 10 every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, part-time, dollar an hour in WOLF, which, by the way, is the same station that Dick Clark started out on, yes, many years ago. Since then, Dick and I have both made about equal amounts of money. So I had not done, since that time, an evening radio show.
It was May of 1965 when Dick landed his job here. And we ask him how he got his job at WKNR.
When I was first contacted by WKNR, I was down at WSAI at the time, Cincinnati, Ohio. I had been there for 3.5 years. And when I was first contacted, I made the initial contact when Gary Stevens went to leave. Now, I knew Gary, and I called him. I said, hey, Gary, I want out of this place, because SAI was going down the drain fast. And he said, call Frank Maruca, which I did. And Frank then offered me the afternoon show, 3 to 7, replacing Gary Stevens. Now, in the interview, Frank and old Jerry Goodwin and a bunch of people, Bob Green, all the guys that popped in Frank's office that day, I'd flown up, spent 2 hours telling me how great Gary was. I mean, they went into, you know, many, many details about it, and I knew Gary was great. And I got so upset hearing how great Gary was that I thought, no way can I step into Gary's shoes. And so when Frank finally asked the question, well, Dick, do you think you can do it? I said, no. That's a true story, honestly. It really is.
Oh, I just love your aftershave lotion, sir.
How about a kiss, baby?
But I just can't stand your face.
That's pretty good, huh?
Here's a guy that's really got to try it.
Bob, after that, I'm ashamed to say my name is
Keener 13.
And I think Frank was somewhat taken aback by that, and I flew back to town that night. Coincidentally, after I finished the interview, I asked for a cab to come out and get me in Dearborn at the radio station. I knew nothing about Detroit. And I said, I want to go downtown. I want to see what downtown Detroit looks like. And I said, I want to go to a restaurant. So the cabbie said, well, what kind of restaurant do you want? I said, it's very medium priced. I said, you know, I'm just visiting in town. I got a few bucks. He let me off at a place called the London Chop House. I walked in there thinking it was a medium-priced restaurant, took a look at the menu, and almost threw up. And I had sauerbraten, really, which was the cheapest thing in the menu. It only cost me $18, you know. But that's a true story, too. So anyway, I went back there. Frank called me a couple days later and said, we've changed the shift 7 to 10 at night. Would you want to do that? And I said, yes, I would try. Then he called back a couple days later and said that they had hired Scott Regan from Kansas City, who was known at the time as Rock Robbins at WHB in Kansas City. Now, I had known of Scott. And I said, well, that's a good move. He's a great jock.
A last chance to turn around. That's Gene Pitney here in the Scott Regan Show for a Monday night. I've just figured out right here that I figured out that if I save for the next 20 years at the rate I've been saving for the past 6 months, I can retire at the age of 60 and owe $100,000.
He took the 7 to 10, then he said, would you be interested in doing 10 to 1? So I had moved from drive time back to 10 to 1, in about 4 days. I said yes. So I came in on a Saturday evening, my wife and I and our two girls at the time. We drove up. We had everything we had in our car and drove into town. And the first voice I heard was Paul Cannon with that big, deep, mellifluous voice that Paul had. And I heard that, and I was half awake. My wife was driving, as she always does. I can't stay awake. And I was listening to this voice, and I said, "Honey, I think I'm at the wrong station." I thought, therefore, everyone in Detroit would have these big, big, deep voices. Fortunately, I found out that was not the case. And so on a Sunday night, I heard Bill Phillips sign off. Remember, Red Vest, Bill Phillips, a fine guy. And he said, "Well, we'll see you Monday night, 10 to 1. So long." And I was sitting in the motel thinking, "Oh, you poor guy, because you're not going to, of course." Well, what happened was when Bill got off the air that night, that Sunday evening, at 10 o'clock, Frank Ruka called him in and let him go. And so Monday morning, they started promoting the fact that I would be on the air that night, hear the new Dick Burton show tonight at 10 o'clock. Well, that was the promotion I got. That was all. Scotty, on the other hand, Scott Regan, who had started, I believe, the previous Wednesday, had quite a big contest, the skateboard contest. How many miles would he be on the skateboard from Kansas City to Detroit? Now, some of you may remember that.
Ralph Zuckman, thank you there, Poopy the Bird, Detroit 19, Michigan. Guesses 113 skateboards I used up on my trip up here. Oh, Ralphie, baby, you are correct, a fool. Yes, indeed. 113 skateboards, you guessed right. You win a rinky-dink skateboard from your Scott Regan show.
In Keenerland on WKNR, we're having fun.
But in the long run, as you look back on it, as a matter of fact, I made a big thing out of it that night on the air, how I did not have a contest and Scotty did.
As you know, Scott Regan is a song of the survey called A Skateboard Song, because I gave a big contest, and so I had to come into town, and nobody had ever heard of me before. And as a matter, I might add that a lot of people in this town still haven't. And so I have invented my own contest called the Picture Contest, which was a very creative title. I found an old manual on radio. So what you do is draw a picture of what you think I look like and send that picture to Picture, WKNR Box 3100, Detroit 13. No, I did it again. You send the story, the picture, I mean the drawing, you send it to Picture, WKNR, Box 1300, Detroit 31, Michigan. Do that for me right now, and then the winner gets a cheap Japanese transistor radio, whoever comes the closest to identifying me. I mean, what I look like. You know. This is called, Yes, Scott Regan is a Fink, because he got his own contest. But I had to make one up.
In the long run, I think that I came out the winner for the simple reason that there was not given any promotion to me. You know, when you come in cold and nobody thinks you're great or fantastic or whatever, you're at a distinct advantage over the other guy who's been pre-sold, you know. So I was lucky, and I'm very happy it worked out the way it did.
Dick Burton remembers the early days at WKNR, and maybe you remember, too.
When I did the night show on WKNR from 10 to 1, since I had never done... Really, and for all intents and purposes, a nighttime show, I really was, it was hit or miss. I didn't know what I was doing. And I tended to be perhaps a little wilder than I had been before. In fact, I have heard tapes of the show, and I really can't believe it was me.
1028 WKNR time, on time, old and time, as we swing along and sing a song. Now, tonight is the night we're going to continue our KNR Top 13 Hitline Auto Accidents of the Weekend. We got up to 5 yesterday, and if you have had an auto accident any time today, any time since I signed off last night at 10 o'clock, until this time, or if you're going to have one any time tonight, if you plan an accident or something of that nature, let us hear about it, and we will get a KNR newsman on the scene to record the accident. We'll play the tape recording of the accident, see if it qualifies for a KNR Top 13 Hitline Auto Accident, and good luck to you.
I guess it was fitting for the time of day. It seemed to work. I will say that after the first 2 or 3 weeks of doing the wild stuff on the night show, I settled down. And I went into just the normal kind of delivery. As I recall, that's true. I have no tapes myself of my own performance on that show. A few people from time to time have played some for me, and I just scratched my head in amazement, you know. Sounded like a latter-day Robin Seymour.
All I can say about Dick is that it's lucky he's had Robin Seymour in Detroit, because then what would he had to talk about?
It's 1021 WKNR time. The DP get-togethers, a little fancy line I like to use every between now and the hour of 1 o'clock in the morning. This is just like a Sunday. Now, unfortunately, there are many, many accidents. Oh, I started the wrong record.
What?
It's not supposed to be on yet. Just a Well, see, you must understand, folks. I don't really have too much understanding of what I am doing here at Radio Wonderful yet. Just a moment here. This will give you a little insight into what radio is really like, see? You get the record ready, and you sort of back it up, and you get it ready to go. Did you hear this last thing? That is what is known as the, what do they call that in the business?
WKNR, AM, FM, Dearborn. Offices in the Sheridan Cadillac, Detroit.
Thank you. Somebody at the door, maybe it's Tom. Come in, Tom.
Guess what?
Oh.
I just heard someone call you a silly goose.
Oh, it's Jim Martin instead. All right, what'd you do? Did you move this box? Just a moment, folks. Just a moment. Did you do this, Ryan? It was supposed to start a record at the beginning. That's why they have beginning grooves on it, man. And speaking of grooves, is this a groovy tune?
After I was in the station about 2 months, they told me they were going to move me to mornings, which I had done for quite a few years anyway, and I was going to replace Swingin' Sweeney. Now, Frank was going to be promoted to assistant program director and music director. Well, one August 7th, 1965, on a Saturday morning, he showed up late for work, which was, you know, very often the case. Frank had a real sleeping problem. He was an insomniac and could not sleep at night, and yet he had to get up every morning, except, I believe, I guess in those days it was Saturday, too, at 4 a.m. to be in at 5. Well, Frank showed up one morning at 7, come to think of it, and Jerry Goodwin, for some reason, had been doing the all-night show, sitting in for Jim Jeffries, I think it was, who had Wizzy O or something, and Jerry and Frank got into a real shouting match in the control room, and a fracas evolved out of this thing, and it turned out that Frank got fired. Frank Sweeney, Swingin' Sweeney. So I went on the morning show the next Monday, August 9, 65, rather than 2 weeks after that, what I was supposed to. And from then on, I've been on the morning, except for the fact when I came back to WXYZ from Baltimore, when I came in the afternoons.
Former CKLW DJ Mike Rivers had this comment about Dick Purton.
There have been a lot of examples of personalities who've left Detroit, gone to other radio markets. A good example is Dick Purton, who went over to a station in Baltimore and did his same act that he does in Detroit and did in Detroit before he left. And apparently, Baltimore was not ready for him. The East Coast is a lot different. They couldn't take the flack that he was throwing out. And he's really dynamite at that, but they just couldn't take it there, and so they had to let him go. It's a funny story. I understand that one of his bits on the air is to link up romantically various public figures around town, just in fiction, of course, all in fun. It turned out that two of the figures he linked up romantically, all in fun, turned out to be, in fact, romantically linked. And completely on the sly, and, well, at any rate, that was one of the reasons that led to his downfall, so they say.
In 1968, Dick found greener pastures in a town called Baltimore. Dick, why did you leave? What happened?
I left WKNR for the very simple reason I wanted to get out of rock radio. WBAL in Baltimore is a fine, middle-of-the-road, very upbeat middle-of-the-road, very much like WXYZ station. They already are number one. They're the only 50,000-watt clear channel station in the Baltimore and Washington area, both. So I was hired in to do the morning show, 6 to 10. And I was told that I was being hired because I was going to be the new concept in broadcasting for them. They were tired of the old approach to radio, and they were going to shake the cobwebs loose with me. Well, I got in the first day and started running into problems right away. I could enumerate many problems for you. But rather than do that, I'll settle on one, which I hope will give you an idea as to people's attitudes. One day I was talking to Gino Marchetti on the phone. Some of you may recall Gino as the ex-Baltimore Colt defensive end. He was in a Baltimore hospital when I was there 3 years ago having a foot operation. Big Daddy Lipscomb had stepped on his foot during the New York Giants-Baltimore Colts famous playoff game, I think in 1958, and he was just getting around to an operation in 1968. Somewhere in the conversation while I was on the phone with him on the air, I referred to the word, the slogan, it must take a lot of guts, or that took guts, or the word guts came into it somewhere, which time after it was done, Al Burke, our general manager, called me in, and he said, Dick, he said, I didn't like your conversation with Gino Marchetti, and I said, why, Al? And he said, well, because you used the non-WBAL word, and I said, what word was that, Al? He said, guts, and I said, guts? He said, yes. He said, we don't use that word around here. I said, why, Al? He said, it's too strong. I said, guts? He said, yes. Well, that, I hope, is an indication of the very antiquated attitudes they have. They're an extremely provincial town. I really do not advise any guy who may be a fledgling disc jockey or otherwise in Detroit, of going to Baltimore, because the attitudes are very, 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 very different between the Midwest and the East.
Digging a little deeper into the Dick Pertin story, we talk with Al Burke, the general manager at the Baltimore radio station, about the brief but controversial stay of one Richard Pertin.
You know, Dick Pertin is a great guy. There's no question about that. One of the things I liked most about Dick was he had a lot of guts. In fact, he used them on the air. I think Dick was one of the first people in this country to take a shot at Spiro Agnew. In fact, I remember the time that Dick and I went down to Annapolis to have lunch with the governor to explain why Dick was referring to the governor's wearing bells on the toes of his shoes. In any event, I know Dick is doing real well out there in Detroit, and I'm pleased to have known him, and I hope to be able to say hello in person one of these times myself.
Tom Ryan, currently with WIID, was Dick Pertin's so-called right-hand man for some years. Ryan remembers...
After about a month and a half that Dick was at Keener, the two of us started working together. I started writing a lot of things. The thing he liked the most about it was the voices that I could do. So we, all of a sudden, I think one night, about 2 months after he was there, he invented the Mary Poppins fan club, in which he was the only president, the only member, I think, in the United States. We tried to get more members, and the most difficult thing, of course, to do was to get in touch with Mary Poppins. We found that was most difficult. We couldn't do it. But the next best thing we did was we got in touch with her dear mother and father, Ma and Pa Poppins.
Hello.
Hi, Andy.
Hello, Mom Poppins.
Yes, it is.
Mom, how are you this morning?
I'm wonderful.
Well, that's fine. Listen, where are you? Where are you calling from?
Well, yesterday we were in Hamtramck.
You were?
Michigan.
Hamtramck, Michigan.
Right.
I know it. And what were you doing there?
Well, we were voting.
Oh, how come you went to Hamtramck to vote, Mom?
Well, where else can you find all those voting polls?
Oh, Mom.
Sick. Oh, you're sick, Mom.
So, Pa and Ma, you each went out and voted, huh?
Yeah. We voted once over at one place and once over at the other place.
Wait a minute. It's illegal to vote more than one time.
I thought illegal was a sick bird.
Well, we had, of course, our resident sports announcer, who was probably the best-known sports announcer in Detroit, was Bill Sports. Bill knew everything, was always at the right place at the right time, wasn't a guarantee he'd be right in the right locker room all the time, but he was there, and he might not show up at the right city, but it was a major league city, and Bill was a good guy.
G. Creepers, Uncle Dick is Captain Happy.
Well, Captain Happy, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing really great, C's.
Well, that's good. Now, Captain Happy, what do you have with all the little nippers, the boys and girls out there?
Yes, today we've got a little project.
A whole project?
Right. We're going to show the little nippers what they can do with Daddy's empty beer cases.
The 24-bottle beer cases.
Right. Oh, just leave the partitions in.
Right.
And you can store all your toys and animal friends.
No kidding. Like what?
Holy cowsies. Yes, sirree.
Holy cowsies, huh?
Right. You can put your pet frog in there.
Right.
Or your banana spiders.
Sure.
Or even your pet snake.
Uh-huh.
You need two compartments for him.
You do.
Or put your baseball trading cards in there.
Right.
The ones with the pictures of Julio Navarro and Fred Gladding in them.
All the stars.
All the big stars. And your toy soldiers with the ones with the arms off them.
Oh, sure.
And well, what happens, is when Grandpa and Grandma come over.
Right.
That's your mommy and daddy's daddy and mommy.
I know it is, Captain Happy.
Take them lickety-split to the basement.
Right.
And you show them all your toys and all those empty beer cases.
Right.
And they'll see what a big lush your daddy really is.
Thanks for dropping in, Captain
Happy. Well, yes, sir. One more thing, Uncle Dick. How about 6 strows to go?
Tom Ryan, now with WIID. One of the best known of the cellar-type personalities around these parts was and is, you guessed it, J.P. McCarthy at WJR. We talk with Joe about the chemistry of morning radio.
Detroit morning radio means a great deal to the 4.5 million people who are in this city, most of whom have to get up early in the morning and get down to work. I believe something like 70% of the population that includes gets up by 7 o'clock in the morning, believe it or not. So Detroit morning radio is a very major alarm clock and a device that gets people's, not only their corpuscles percolating, but also their brain moving. Now, as far as morning radio in Detroit is concerned, compared with other markets, comparable size cities, major population areas around the country, it was at one time quite different, really, unique, in fact, 10 years ago, 19... Uh, 1960, 1961, it was what was known in the country as a very soft market, because there are only 8 radio stations, really. And in a population center of our size, that meant that no matter what you put on, you were going to get a sizable enough audience so that the stations could make some money. So consequently, I think in terms of competition, 10 years ago, Detroit radio was soft and just really was not on a competitive level with other major areas like New York, like Chicago, like San Francisco or Los Angeles or even Philadelphia. However, certain changes have taken place in the last few years, and it has become exactly 180 degrees from that soft market. It is now what is known as a tough market.
What about competition, Joe?
We have some very strong competition with WXYZ, which is an extremely well-programmed middle-of-the-road station with very strong personalities up and down the line. CKLW is probably one of the best top 40 formatted stations in the world and run extremely well. The FM stations that are catering to the young people do their job and do it very well, and they're getting a share of the audience. And so what has happened, there has been a proliferation. No matter what you are and what you want in terms of listening to the radio, you can find it someplace on either the AM or FM dial at almost any time of the day. And that was not true 10 or 11 or 12 years ago.
We wondered, too, just how important is radio in Detroit?
As far as my part on WJR Radio in the morning, if you're asking me what I think we do, what kind of a service, we get up. And hopefully our audience gets up wanting the same things that we're going to talk about. What has happened last night? What is current, what's interesting, and or hopefully funny, and or sad. We try and run the gamut of emotions without making it sound sticky. We try and tell them things in an interesting and entertaining way, and yet always keep in mind that it's a service program. They want to know what time it is. They want to know how to dress the kids for school. They want to know what the traffic conditions are. And they want to hear some music that they can stand.
Okay, sir, southbound Southfield, near 7 Mile, there's a stalled truck, according to the MEP, so be careful. At the moment, the man is calling for a windy day with periods of showers and thundershowers today, ending early tonight, cloudy tonight and tomorrow. High today in the upper 60s, the low tonight in the low 50s, the high Tuesday in the upper mid-60s. Certainly nothing to write home about. It's gray right now. Winds are from the southeast at 10 miles. The relative humidity is 75%, 60 at Detroit City and 58 at Metro right now. See, they're having a big testimonial dinner for an old friend of yours and mine, Joe Gentile, as Joe celebrates his 40th year in broadcasting. Joe began his career in Toledo, Ohio, folks. Radio station WSPD in the spring of 1931. And a lot of his friends are going to help him celebrate his 40 years. Monday, June 7th at the Gourmet House in St. Clair Shores. Okay, if you'd like to attend, you remember Joe, of course, from so many things. I guess Joe is probably best remembered for his days with Ralph Bingie, Gentile and Bingie, the great comedy morning team that ruled Detroit radio for so many years. And most of us grew up listening to those guys. Joe Gentile. It's 25 and a half after 7 o'clock. Remember when we had Joe up a couple of years ago to do the whole morning show with us, and we had some tapes that he and Ralph had made several years ago from their old morning days on CKLW. Screamingly funny stuff. Want to buy a car?
JP, tell us a little bit about your listeners, those groggy-eyed folk who dig what you do and how you get involved with them and why you left them to go to the Golden Gate City of San Francisco.
The audience is an intelligent one, and you simply can't insult their intelligence in any way, musically, information-wise, or in terms of entertainment either. I started on morning radio in Detroit in 1958, summer, when Marty McNeely left to go to what is now WKNR and what was then WKMH. And I did the morning and afternoon show until 1963 when I went to San Francisco. And I went to San Francisco really to make... I couldn't do any commercials at the time. station was owned by the Goodwill station in 1963, and they had a rule that none of their on-the-air people could record commercials, and I felt that I had something to contribute in that area, and it would also augment my income a good deal, and I felt that that my left hand was not able to operate in tandem with my right hand. And the offer I had from San Francisco was a very good one. It was an exciting town. It was when WJR was sold and Capital Cities bought them, and I got a subsequent offer to come back with the freedom to do commercials, with the promise that there might be some television involved, and with a very nice offer in terms of dough. I was, at that moment, negotiating to do the morning show at a very major radio station in Los Angeles. And I got, you know, I got called from WJR on exactly the right day at exactly the right time. It was, I'm an impulsive guy. And I said, okay.
Southbound Southfield near 7 Mile Road, we mentioned that stalled truck. It's blocking the right lane, and traffic is vast path backed up now to 9 Mile Road. Careful, 27 after 7, it's a sleepy Monday morning. Maybe a wolf call or two would help later. Here's Lynn Anderson. Hint, hint.
For once in my life, I know the meaning of happiness.
Detroit's my hometown. I'm happy here. I think I know the city. I think I can, no one can really feel the pulse of 4.5 million people, but we just give it our very best shot every morning.
What about the size of the audience, and how long will they be around?
Now, we carry gigantic shares of the audience. Whether or not we'll be able to continue to do this is a moot point. It's we hope we can, but other markets have indicated that it's very, very difficult to do. Other areas, it's in Chicago, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, and in New York, a major percentage of the audience for any one particular radio station would be 15%. Well, we carry double that, and whether or not we can continue to do that is a job that all of us here at WJR must address ourselves to, understanding the problems involved. The competition will not get any easier. It will get exceedingly tougher. And I think radio at some point in time will be a service that will be performed to a very small group of people compared to the numbers that we broadcast to now.
On WJR Radio in Detroit, this is J.P. McCarthy with the sound of Monday morning. I'm overcast and slow-moving. And why not? We'll talk some sports in just a moment after we hear it for Carte Blanche.
We are fortunate and blessed at WJR because we have a facility that's 50,000 watts on a clear channel, which makes us one of very few radio stations in the country with a very wide-reaching, beaming, super-powerful signal, which means that we are members of communities, just like we are in Detroit, in places like Tiffin, Ohio, and Findlay, Ohio, and Cleveland, Ohio, and Lansing, and Fort Wayne, and Flint. If you talk about the Detroit area population market, you're talking about something in the area of 4.5 million. If you're talking about people in our primary signal area, you're talking about 20 million people.
J.P. McCarthy at WJR. A look and a listen to country music and the rise of WDEE. The change from WJBK to the Big D. And a chat with some of those guys you may listen to a lot. That in the upcoming segment of Detroit Radio, Then, Now, and Tomorrow.